Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Thursday, October 3rd.
The City of Santa Fe's Buckman Direct Diversion Project is once again drawing water from the Rio Grande after last month's heavy rains threatened to clog the project's intake valves. Gary Durant is the chief operator at the Buckman Project.
The turbidities have gone down in the river to where we're once again able to withdraw water and treat it.
Durant adds there remains more water in the Rio Grande than usual.
They're a little bit high for this time of year still. We've been hovering somewhere around 1,000 cubic feet per second. For this time of year, that's actually quite high, but we seem to be getting quite a lot of continuing flow out of the past storms that had come by. We do expect that to drop off, but for now, since the turbidity's gone down, which is very good, that was giving us a problem. Now that turbidity's down, we're happy to have the extra water there.
The former chief of the New Mexico Finance Authority is suing the Martinez administration, accusing it of delaying release of records. Rick May was fired last year after the discovery that the authority's audit had been faked. The authority's former comptroller, Greg Campbell, later pleaded guilty to forgery and securities fraud. Among the requested documents were email between administration officials and NMFA board members since 2011. May's suit is seeking damages in the matter. Last December, a report by the state auditor found May not directly involved with the bogus audit. Santa Fe is soon to consider new restrictions on buskers, the musicians who perform for donations in the downtown area. City Councilor Chris Calvert is proposing prohibiting huskers from the plaza and surrounding streets. His proposal says oftentimes the buskers are an aesthetic nuisance. Today's Journal North reports the plan is to limit the sites where they could play to just five, with only one performer at each. Currently, more than 200 musicians pay the city $35 for an annual license to perform. The matter will come before the Public Safety Committee on October 15th. A just-released federal audit of Los Alamos National Laboratory faults its radioactive waste treatment operation for cost overruns and missed deadlines. Back in 2004, the facility was to be rebuilt over a five-year period. The report cites that some $56 million has already been spent in preparation, but no actual work has begun. It's now thought the project is unlikely to be finished until 2020, at well more than double the initial cost estimates. The Department of Energy says the project is just one example among many, indicating management inefficiencies at the lab. An ironic story from the Four Corners as a fired New Mexico high school principal received honors recently as the state's Principal of the Year. The Farmington Daily Times reports that Joyce Rock joined other award-winning principals in the nation's capital last month, celebrating their honors. Rock had been principal at Career Prep High School and was critical of plans to close the alternative Shiprock School. She was placed on leave in May and her contract was not renewed. Officials found additional funding and kept the school open. Rock had filed suit against the Consolidated School District. Announced today is the creation of the New Mexico Film Foundation, a nonprofit organization that will offer grants to New Mexico independent filmmakers. The foundation's president and CEO, Dirk Norris, says that since film incentives have stabilized and are drawing the large film and TV projects to the state, it's time to turn attention and money to supporting New Mexicans who want to make independent films here. Norris plans to educate investors and the public about film financing and the value of filmmaking in New Mexico. Dirk Norris will be a guest on KSFR's CinemaScope show tonight at 6:30. AAA New Mexico says the statewide average for a gallon of regular unleaded fuel has fallen by 6 cents this week and is now at $3.24. That's 14 cents lower than the current national average and 42 cents less than just 1 year ago. Weather for Santa Fe, sunny today with highs near 70. A strong cold front is expected to arrive tonight, bringing strong winds and much colder temperatures. Winds could gust to 50 miles an hour, and strong crosswinds are expected tomorrow morning along the I-25 corridor and other north-south roads. Friday's highs will be in the upper 50s, while overnight lows will make their first dip of the season into the upper 20s. I'm Tom Trowbridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, all the major indices in negative territory. The Dow currently off 114 points at 15,018, the NASDAQ down 36 at 3,778, and the S&P 500 off 12 points. It stands at 1,680. Gold, normally a safe haven when investors feel bearish, it too is down $11.40, trading at $1,309.30 per troy ounce. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. The shutdown of the federal government is now in its third day, with both parties still at loggerheads over approval of a continuing resolution on the budget. Republicans are still insisting that any end to the impasse is contingent on a delay of implementation of the nation's Affordable Care Act. For Democrats, that's a deal breaker, as such a move is outside the scope of order for simply funding continued operation of the U.S. government. Joining us now is New Mexico 3rd District Representative Ben Ray Luan. Congressman, where do we stand on this third day of stalemate?
Well, it's very frustrating. It seems that United States Senator Ted Cruz, the Tea Party leader who was elected to a U.S. senator, is now serving in dual roles in a bicameral legislature and is the acting speaker of the House of Representatives. It seems that he's the one that's calling the shots. And there's a lot of frustration, not only with myself and other Democrats in the House, but his Republican U.S. Senate colleagues. Yesterday, there was a closed-door meeting with Republican U.S. senators where it's been reported that U.S. senators were very critical of Senator Cruz and that they called him out for not having an exit plan. Other Republicans have described him as walking all of the House Tea Party Republicans into the middle of the street into oncoming traffic and then walking back to the sidewalk and leaving him there to face all the damage. This is bad for the country. It's bad for our communities. It's bad for our friends and our families and neighbors in New Mexico. This is just so very frustrating. And Republicans are doing this. Let us not forget, Republicans are only doing this to defund the Affordable Care Act, defund Obamacare. To take away this notion that we finally got rid of pre-existing conditions, that we are expanding coverage to people that were not able to afford coverage in years past. And that's what this is about to our Republicans in the House and especially to the Tea Party Republicans.
And it still remains a matter of no restart of the federal government without tampering with the nation's Affordable Care Act, yes?
That's what the Republicans' position exactly is, and that's what it comes down to. And it just goes to show the holes that are truly in the Republican argument, Dan. Republicans continue to try to persuade the American people that it's House Democrats that are not negotiating with them. Look, here's the truth. And this is something that's been so hard to stomach even. The Republicans, when they passed the Budget Control Act that gave us sequestration a while back, and then the Paul Ryan budget numbers, which use those sequestration, that 10% across the board cut as their baseline, Democrats said, absolutely not, we do not support your numbers. And I know that I oppose the Paul Ryan budget. But even in the face of trying to get the federal government operating in the short term, Democrats are willing to negotiate with them to their number. And Republicans still say, well, that's not good enough. And they refuse to take yes for an answer. Republicans are saying until we defund the Affordable Care Act, that's where they're coming from. And so this is just so very frustrating. And all the people that have signed up for coverage in New Mexico, all our friends and neighbors that have pre-existing conditions that can finally now get coverage, can you imagine what Republicans in the House, the Tea Party Republicans, would do to them?
And Ben Ray, there's also something else that gets overlooked in this matter. Any clean continuing resolution would now pass a budget that locks in the contentious federal sequester cuts that took effect this year without any renegotiation, correct?
That's the sad part of all of this, and that's where Republicans, when they say that the President and the Senate Democrats and the House Democrats refuse to negotiate with them and compromise with them, can you identify a larger compromise? I would say that's a pretty big compromise. The Democrats are willing to come forward for this short-term continuing resolution to go forward, and they still refuse to take that, and that's where this problem is.
The shutdown is uniform, that is, there's an across-the-board effect over the entire scope of federal government. Many Republicans are now asking for piecemeal exceptions to be made to aspects of government most visible to citizens. Any comments?
They've shattered the window in someone's home, and then, you know, one of the broken pieces that fell to the floor that may be broken to three or four other pieces is what they're picking up to say, let's fix this piece of the window before we put the window back together. Well, we could repair the entire window. We could get the government up and running in the next 20 minutes, Dan. If Speaker Boehner would let us vote on the Senate continuing resolution so that we could get to the negotiations about the full year budget, and also with the potential voluntary defaults that Republicans are going to set us on a path for, with not paying the bills that the United States has already incurred, and would set markets into a downward spiral, would arbitrarily increase interest rates for those looking to get into a home or to a new car or with credit cards. Republicans have set us on a very dangerous path here, and there's, again, they have no exit plan. There's nowhere that they look like they're going to be willing to keep the federal government open and to open it up, other than playing the games that they are. And just one last thing, Dan. The Republicans have brought forward this piecemeal approach to trying to fund pieces of the government that they say are very important. And Democrats don't disagree that making sure we're taking care of our veterans, keeping our national parks and our monuments open, funding the NIH. Republicans are now trying to accuse Democrats that we don't care about veterans or kids with cancer. It's a sad day in the Congress, but even the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the nation's largest organization for combat veterans, stated that the VA needs to be fully funded, not piecemeal, and not used as leverage. So even the VFW is coming out with big concerns and an opposition to this Republican approach.
An NMSU professor of economics has outlined the dire consequences of prolonged shutdown here due to the large number of federal workers in our state. They comprise 3% of the labor force in New Mexico. Loss of income to those people and our state's military workers could be enough to tip New Mexico back into recession over time. Are you hearing concerns from constituents?
Constituents in New Mexico are very concerned, and we are hearing from them, Dan. And it's not just constituents from the 3rd Congressional District. It's citizens from all of New Mexico that are calling and sending emails and letting us know their concerns. And it's also those small businesses, those contractors that are doing work with the federal government, or even small businesses that benefit from our public lands that are now going to be shut down, where there's no funding to keep the BLM or Forest Service lands open. There's outfitters we have hunters and fishermen that are even coming to New Mexico that are being put out of work. Those that have built businesses around an ecotourism that depend on access to these beautiful places and treasures that we have are being shut out. And so the ramifications are even larger than what I believe could truly be measured with just looking at a snapshot of the direct employment and those employees that have now been furloughed and displaced.
And now there's a lot of conjecture that as the shutdown continues, its resolution will be drawn into the fight over raising the nation's debt ceiling. Do you think that's where we're headed?
I'm terribly frightened, Dan, that that's the path that the Republican Tea Party House, Congress, led by Ted Cruz in the Senate, are on. They have not shown any willingness to come together to accept the compromise, to take yes for an answer, to accept the Republican numbers in a short-term continuing resolution to keep that running, to keep the federal government running, and they continue to take the position that until they defund the Affordable Care Act, they're not willing to budge. The ramifications that will come with a default, and this would be the first voluntary default ever in the history of the United States that our House Tea Party Republicans are taking us on, and the ramifications to the economy are very dire.
New Mexico 3rd District Representative Ben Ray Luan, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Canticum Novum Chorus and Orchestra kicks off its 10th anniversary celebration with a concert of unjustly neglected gems by Pergolesi, Mendelssohn, and Donizetti, plus Antony Le Fleming's moving tribute to the 1918 armistice Everyone Sang. Saturday and Sunday, October 5th and 6th, 4 p.m. at the Scottish Rite Center with a pre-concert lecture by Oliver Présent starting at 3. For tickets, call 988-1234 or visit ticketssantafe.org. Canticum Novum is a tax-exempt organization.
22 minutes past the hour as At Noon on KSFR continues. Fracking, that's the process wherein oil and gas is extracted by drilling deep underground into stores of the energy sources unavailable before the current technological advances of recent years. It remains a divisive practice. Oil and gas industry advocates maintain the process is performed with safeguards directed at protecting both air and water quality. Environmental advocates say there are persistent problems with groundwater contamination and other concerns. Released today is a new report by the Environment New Mexico Research and Policy Center, a state-based, citizen-funded environmental advocacy organization. Joining us now is the director of that organization, Sanders Moore. Sanders, give us the overview of your new report.
Sure. So our report today, which is called Fracking by the Numbers, quantifies the damage done so far by the dirty drilling practice of hydraulic fracturing, commonly known as fracking, both here in New Mexico and across the country. The numbers essentially don't lie. There are a lot of numbers we've discussed here, such as toxic wastewater, water use, chemical use, air pollution, land damage, and global warming emissions. And they really show that fracking has taken a dirty and destructive toll on our environment. And if fracking continues unchecked, these numbers will only get worse.
Now, the oil and gas industry has offered assurances that fracking is performed with an eye toward the environment. For instance, it's often cited that the extraction wells go so far down below the water table and aquifers that there's very little risk of contamination.
Right. So we take into account in our report and call our definition of fracking is the whole process. So not just the well production, but also kind of from beginning to end, so the disposal of the waste as well. And that is where I've seen a lot of concerns around the waste, the end of the cycle, in addition to the production. And so we've actually found that 3 billion gallons of toxic wastewater were generated in New Mexico from fracking in 2012 alone, which is the equivalent of filling more than 4,500 Olympic-sized swimming pools with this waste. And one thing is that we utilize a lot of open waste pits to dispose of our waste, which can cause leaching into our groundwater supplies and can contaminate our groundwater above in the waste disposal part of the process, and not necessarily during the drilling.
Sanders, can you speak to the extent of fracking operations here in New Mexico and whether it's something that increases in scope year over year?
It is. So we essentially had to, for all of these numbers, had to compile information from a lot of different sources because there's no centralized database either in New Mexico or nationally. And so we worked with the New Mexico Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department with the Oil Conservation Division and received the information that there are 1,353 fracking wells in New Mexico. We also received a higher number from the Oil Conservation Division, but we decided to go with a more conservative number in terms of how many wells are here in New Mexico. And so we are seeing there were about 450 drilled in 2012 alone, and we're only seeing that get higher as each year goes by.
And how will you now utilize your report and its findings? Is it something you plan to present to concerned state lawmakers to address legislatively?
Ultimately, that would be a really great use of this report. We would love to see more regulations at the state level. Unfortunately, we have recently gone backwards. We used to have in place regulations that protected our groundwater from oil and gas waste called the PIT rule. It was rolled back a few months ago by the Oil Conservation Commission, and it was very effective at protecting our groundwater from oil and gas waste. In fact, before it was enacted, there were over 400 cases of contamination, and once it was enacted, there were none. So we know that it was very effective in helping protect our groundwater from oil and gas waste, and unfortunately, we have moved backwards. In the light of this, and since our leaders in New Mexico are not moving us in the right direction in terms of protecting us from fracking, there are a couple of things that we are working with leaders in Washington, D.C. to do, and that is essentially urge President Obama to protect our national parks and forests from fracking, including Otero Mesa and Chaco Canyon National Historic Park right here in New Mexico. And then also introducing a bill to close a loophole that exempts oil and gas waste from the nation's hazardous waste laws. So those are the two big pieces that we're moving forward with right now at the national level in order to protect us here in New Mexico and across the country. And again, that's because we're moving backwards in the state instead of forwards.
Final thoughts from you on the issue?
One thing, so I mentioned that there are 3 billion gallons of toxic wastewater generated in New Mexico in 2012 alone. Another piece of information to know is that the fracking practice has used 1.3 billion gallons of fresh water since 2005 just here in New Mexico. And that's enough water for 9,000 Santa Fe families for a year. And during this time of extreme and moderate drought, we should not be wasting our water on fracking and should be using it for other purposes.
Sanders Moore with the Environment New Mexico Research and Policy Center. Many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Programming on KSFR is underwritten in part by Medlin Mechanical, a full-service plumbing company specializing in green energy solutions for homes and business in the Santa Fe area for over 5 years. Medlin Mechanical's geothermal and solar systems are designed to cut energy costs and reduce carbon footprint. And tax credits for new systems are available through 2016. To learn more, visit medlinmechanical.com or call 577-8087. That's 577-8087.
28 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. The University of New Mexico Hospital Cancer Center has been working in collaboration with Sandia Labs on new cancer treatment strategies. Here with the story is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard.
For a number of years, the University of New Mexico Cancer Institute has been working with Sandia Labs in Albuquerque on a new cancer treatment strategy. Dr. Jeff Brinker is with the Cancer Center.
So my background is in making very small things. This is typically referred to as nanoscience and technology. And, of course, the Cancer Center it's a very respected cancer center, but they had not been working the field that has emerged, which is called, it's a nanotechnology for cancer. This idea of using nanoparticles for delivery of drugs to cancer has emerged over the past 10 years as being a pretty hot topic in the field of cancer therapy. So given that I was making a lot of different types of nanoparticles and we had a tremendous cancer center at UNM, I decided in around 2008 to contact Cheryl Willman and see if she was interested in writing a grant and pursuing research in the field of cancer nanotechnology. And so we wrote a grant, and it was funded by the National Cancer Institute as a program called the Alliance for Nanotechnology and Cancer. And so we wrote a grant and became part of this it's quite a large alliance. It has Harvard and MIT and Stanford and Caltech and Northwestern, some very prominent schools. And so for UNM, we actually got both a research grant in this alliance and a training grant in this alliance, drugs to cancer. One of the cancers that Cheryl Willman works on particularly is a childhood leukemia called acute lymphoblastic leukemia, and so that was one of the foci of our research, was to try to figure out a way to deliver drugs to that particular leukemia.
By using more tumor-specific treatments, the hope is to lessen potential side effects.
One of the main ideas is to avoid all the side effects, because obviously if you just inject a chemotherapy drug into your body, you tend to kill all rapidly dividing cells. So that's why you lose your hair and other things. And so one of the main points is if you could target the particle so that it would bind to the cancer cell much more strongly than any other cell, then deliver the drug into that cancer cell, then, you know, we could overcome a lot of side effects, other toxicities. And another feature of this, there are a lot of drugs that are just extremely hard to inject IV because of their, let's say, that maybe they're not very water-soluble or something like this. So the particle can serve to repackage drugs that would be otherwise undeliverable and thereby allow you to use a whole much wider spectrum of drugs. I mean, some of these drugs could be phenomenal, and companies spend a lot of money developing them, but they're very hard to deliver. So that's another aspect of this nanoparticle delivery.
It is likely to be some time before these drugs actually make it to the market.
Well, we have a number of projects that are going on kind of concurrently. We have this project with the National Cancer Institute that is really, it's really a research-oriented project that, we have to see if they're going to renew the program, but our project lasts for another 2 years, and we're hoping by that time to have something into, clinical trial of some sort. That would be very successful from our standpoint.
Dr. Jeff Brinker with the University of New Mexico Cancer Center.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a fascinating concept of, this idea of delivering things in nanoparticles. I would say it's much more complicated than originally thought, because it's very easy to make a nanoparticle and associate it with a drug. But the real crux of the matter is killing cancer in vivo, in the living system, as opposed to in, cell culture dishes and all sorts of things. So it's very easy to demonstrate concepts of nanoparticle-based drug delivery in a petri dish and kill cancer there. But the complexities of particles interacting in the bloodstream and all, that's where it's very challenging.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
From farm to feast, the Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute hosts the 7th annual Fall Fiesta Gala on Saturday, October 5th at 6 p.m., featuring local harvest food prepared by 12 celebrity chefs, live and silent auctions, and music by the Straight Up Jazz Trio. Proceeds benefit the Farmers Market. To learn more or make reservations, visit farmersmarketinstitute.org or call 983-7726. A message from the nonprofit Santa Fe Farmers Market Institute.
12:35 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
I'm going to make another confession. By the way, you saved me a lot of trips to church. I haven't been to a church confessional since I stole young Abe Lincoln's bicycle in 1843. But enough of that. Here's my confession. I've never watched a complete show of Dancing with the Stars. I've probably seen more of Dancing with the Stars on news clips than I have on the actual show. Though why, other than self-promotion, dancing is even mentioned in a newscast, I'll never know. But looking at pretty women moving around, I get that. But watching famous and semi-famous people cavort on stage to music? No thanks. My aversion to Dancing with the Stars probably has to do with my upbringing in Minnesota. Once a year, we would celebrate at harvest time. It was my job to harvest live garfish from the local rivers. Since garfish can reach up to 10 feet in length, they made for lively dance partners until, of course, since they were out of water, they died. We called it Dancing with the Gars.
I heard that.
For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
That concludes today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's Extended Noon News Hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge and Charles Maynard.